Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling. Dialect is Bristol's first podcast. Set up in 2001 with a Millennium Grant from the Scarman Trust, we're on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon. That's bcfmradio.com/dialect. This week, a Josip Broz Tito special. He was the communist leader of the Yugoslav Partisan Army of World War II and died in 1980, aged 88. He was also, of course, the Yugoslav president after the war that famously ended up distrusting the Soviet Union every bit as much as the West, daring Stalin to invade Yugoslavia, and he said he'd fight the Russians just like he fought the Nazis. So we'll be hearing partisan music from World War II. Also, David Guinness. He's an engineer who you might call a Yugoslavophile. And we go to Tito's villa. It's called Villa Galeb, which means seagull, in Herceg Novi in Montenegro. I visited that with a guide, Alan Filipovic. So off we go with our Josip Broz Tito special.
The man who came to embody the hopes of a nation was born Josip Broz in 1892. The seventh of 14 children, he soon learned to pull his weight, laboring to keep the family farm afloat. Only six of his siblings survived into adulthood, a searing lesson to the young Josip of the fragility of life.
His mother, who he admired very much, was very hard-working, the typical sort of good farmer's wife who worked very hard and looked after her children. His father was a drunkard who gambled his money away and was a bit of a useless character, really.
I'm David Guinness. I'm actually an Aldertonian, but in 1972 I was a shop steward on the assembly line at Ford's Dagenham. So I know a little bit about, well, in my vocabulary, how the other half lived. Now, I'm basically an engineer, and I worked on the space program in 1968. I went to business school at MIT, which was a quite amazing place. We graded the teachers, and I got interested in cooperatives, and someone said, I think it was the sociology professor. He said, well, if you're interested in cooperatives, go to Yugoslavia. Well, I found out a bit more about Yugoslavia, and I thought, this is the way things should be.
So what year was your visit, and what was Yugoslavia like?
Well, I learned a few words of Serbo-Croat, and I touched down in Yugoslavia in 1969, and I spent a month there. And it was a quite extraordinary place. One of the first things that struck me was that there were no licensing laws for alcohol at all. People could brew their own slivovitz on their farm, and you could get a drink at a cafano at 3 o'clock in the morning. There was that. Now, the rest of it I'd heard about in America. Basically, that Tito was a dictator, and yet, underneath him, Yugoslav citizens lived in an environment of unparalleled freedom.
Well, when you say freedom, what do you mean? There's lots of different ways that word is used, David, isn't there?
Well, freedom at work. It's quite true to say that in Tito's Yugoslavia, the workers could sack their boss. What used to happen was you could employ up to seven people. In a larger enterprise, it was run by an elected workers' council, who in turn appointed the director. And if the director turned out to be unsatisfactory, or the workers' council didn't like him, they could sack him and appoint someone else. So it was genuine industrial democracy. We've heard industrial democracy mean all sorts of things. This was the real thing that happened.
So how did that manifest itself in the way that ordinary Yugoslavs lived their life? I mean, you can contrast that kind of thing to, you know, a sort of British version or US or German versions of the way industries work.
Well, I met someone who was a Yugoslav, and he said to me this. He said, you can enter Yugoslavia by seven different countries. Now, I'm not going to remember them all, but there was Greece, there was Italy, there was Albania, there was Romania, and three others. But, he said, people stand straighter in Yugoslavia. Now, to me, that spoke volumes. When I went there, I had two questions. One was, did the system work? And secondly, did the people like it? Well, work, it half did. In 1950, Yugoslavia was a largely peasant population. By the time Tito died, they were making their own cars under license from Fiat and building their own ships under Split. So the system obviously worked.
So when did Tito die, and what led to the breakup of Yugoslavia? Was it just Tito's death?
What happened was...
Can you just start with the year he died?
Yes, yes. 1980. Tito didn't believe in his own death, somehow. So he made no arrangement for his succession at all. So you had the different republics of Yugoslavia, Croatia, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Montenegro. They all wanted to be the boss of Yugoslavia, and that led to a civil war. Now, I suspect at that point that the CIA was involved. If you have a country that's consisting of republics that basically hate each other, it's pretty easy to destabilize it. You just shoot someone and blame it on someone else. And then there's a civil war. Well, that's what happened. And that was the end of Tito's Yugoslavia. Although, still to this day, you'll see some people having a photograph of Tito up in their shop and saying Tito dobro organizzazione. Tito had a good organization. So that was basically what happened. Now, all of that, the breakup was public. We all saw it on our television screens. And that's what Yugoslavia gets remembered for. And Tito's Yugoslavia, what happened there, the really good things that happened, you see, it was neither capitalism or Soviet communism. It was something quite new. And it was called worker self-management. And, it was Yugoslav socialism, really.
To what extent is there still some sort of socialism left in that part of the world? Does it still exist?
Very little. It was, there's evidence that I read that it was systematically wiped out by NATO. There was precision bombing took place, and the self-managed enterprises, including the Zastava car factory, were bombed, but the new private enterprises, which were given, were left untouched.
What about your vision of the future of Europe and Yugoslavia particularly? Do you think that there's any real hope that we'll regain some of these happier industries? Because nowadays, you know, a lot of trade unionists across Europe are targeted still. People who try to do organisation within workers often find themselves without a job. We've had a big scandal in Britain over the last couple of years, another one to do with blacklisting, for example. And this surely doesn't foster good industrial relations, where trade unionists are being secretly targeted and may lose their job for life.
Yes. Well, what is not very well known is that there are something like 500 businesses in this country that operate on Yugoslav-type systems. There's the two big ones are Essential Trading and Suma Foods. They both have articulated lorries to deliver their produce and employ over 100 people. Now, the problem in this country is that these businesses, these 500 businesses, they operate under a very complicated legal system. Now, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, and many others have their own legal system for a framework in which a cooperative business, as it's called, some call it workers' control, but I call it a self-managed enterprise, can exist. It has limited liability and this sort of thing. In the UK, we have nothing at all. And what is urgently needed, if businesses like this are to foster, is a body of legislation passed by Parliament so that there would be a proper worker cooperative branch of company law.
So that was David Guinness. Next, we go to the villa itself, the Villa Galeb in Herceg Novi in Montenegro, and our guide is Alan Filipovic. After this.
Без свободы не висал рад. Welcome to the Villa Galeb, the official name of this building, which on Montenegrin means seagull. This was one of 33 presidential villas across former Yugoslavia for the President Tito, but unlike the others, this one was meant to serve primarily as a therapy center for the president. There is an entire therapy level, which you will see during the tour, of course. The architect was local, named Milorad Petjevic, and the building itself has 5,500 square meters. Park around it has additional 75,000 square meters. And what's interesting about those numbers is that everything was fully completed in only 6 months in 1976. Almost everything you'll see inside is authentic from Tito's time, and almost everything of that is from some part of former Yugoslavia. And the first example that I would like to say is this white stone surrounding the building. It's from a quarry in Croatia on the island of Brač, and it's known that the stone from the same quarry was used in part in the construction of the White House in Washington. So, in a matter of speaking, welcome to the White House.
Almost.
This is the conference hall, and it was used for the official sessions of Yugoslav government of that time. And that was because, Tito was here four times. Each time he stayed for about a month or two. So that means that Yugoslavia was practically governed from this very room when Tito was here. Also, besides this official role, this room was also used as a movie theater. You can see the openings of movie projectors on that wall over there. And that was simply because Tito was a huge fan of movies. He enjoyed at least one movie each night before bedtime. And usually it was his favorite Western movies, Cowboys and Indians. Photos on this half of the wall are photos from 1974, the year when Tito first visited Tigalo for medical reasons. Besides the president and his wife, people in the photos are mainly local people. And the only person that's not local on these photos is this lady over here. I do believe you know who she is. I have to say that the queen was never in this building, but her son, Prince Charles, did. Since it was an unofficial meeting, there are no photos of that event, and that's why we put this one instead, to commemorate it in some way.
So what year was Prince Charles here?
It was 77, I think. And here is the president with his wife, Jolanka. She was his third and last wife. They got married shortly after the end of World War II. She was over 20 years younger than he was, And also she held the rank of colonel in the Yugoslav army when they got married, since she was an army nurse during World War II. So that's why she had that high military rank. And now we can go outside to see the view. As you can see, the view is one of the main reasons why the villa was built here. At the entrance of the bay, you can see a small island and the fort Mamula. The fort was built by the Austrian Empire in the mid-19th century. And during World War II, it was an Italian prison, up until the fall of Italy in 1943. In front of us is Peninsula Luštica. And over there in the distance is Mount Lovćen. One of the symbols of Montenegro, actually, because one of the most significant monarchs in Montenegrin history, Njegoš II, was buried on top of that mountain. Down there by the sea line, before this villa was built, there was a private home about two or three stories high. During the construction, federal government paid the owners a lot of money so they could move out. As soon as they did, the government simply leveled down the house so nothing could block the view of the president. How much influence Tito had on the people around him says the following story. On his first day that he arrived here, he exited out to see the view. And in addition to this, below us were all along the building were flowers in the colors of Yugoslavian flag. And those palms down there, they were just planted. And Tito saw everything and made one simple comment. And I'm emphasizing just one comment to the people around him. He said, "This is beautiful, this is nice, but those palms, they look ridiculous. They look like flowers." With that comment, he went inside for a good night's sleep. The very next morning, he exited out again to enjoy the view. And now those palms were all of a sudden fully grown trees. When it was Tito in question, almost nothing was impossible. This area of Montenegro was occupied by Italian fascist forces. That was until 1943, then was Italy capitulated. And after that, for a short period, Nazis from Germany took over, and all that was ended in 1944. This is the almost authentic look of the presidential office. Everything is as it was back in Tito's time, except for the photo on the wall behind the desk. It wasn't here when Tito was here, of course. He was also known as a very, very punctual man. During his time here, he was at this office every morning at 7 a.m. sharp. Not once that he was late for work. Although he was literally the most powerful man in the country, he wanted to set an example to the people around him with that. This is a fireplace hall, basically speaking, one big living room of the building, a place for informal meetings, sometimes concerts, or even sometimes theatrical plays. And Tito's last day in the building was on April 15th in 1979, a day when big catastrophic earthquake hit Montenegrin coast. And at the moment of the earthquake, Tito was inside this building. All of them ran outside over there. And when the trembling stopped, Tito requested only his driver and his military aid officer, and three of them alone, without any additional security, drove all the way through the coast of Herceg Novi, so the president could see the damage for himself. Upon his return here, His security advisors told him to return to Belgrade immediately, the capital of Yugoslavia at the time, since it was still very dangerous to stay in this area because of the strong aftershocks. Tito refused that and instead ordered to raise him a tent again outside over there. And he actually slept in a tent for one more night and only then returned to Belgrade. Again, he wanted to set an example and to show to the people from this area that he is with them in such a difficult moment. And I can say that it's still remembered among the people from this area. Also, even after Tito died, this was a place for some very important meetings. Maybe the most important one was on September the 17th in 1991. It was a meeting from one side, Laura Carrington from European Union, from the other side, presidents of all former Yugoslav republics. It was a last meeting of that kind, and unfortunately it was a futile attempt to stop the civil war in Yugoslavia. September the 17th, 1991. This is Tito's personal dining room, if you can call it personal when there's a table for 20 people here. Behind that wall was Tito's personal library, now just an empty room. And behind this wall, Tito's personal kitchen. And I'm saying personal because Tito had everything personal in the building. From this, even to the personal washing machine in laundry service downstairs, where only his clothes was washed and nobody else. It was said that it was done because of the security reasons. This is the pink suite. You can see where the name comes from. Everything is in pink. And it was intended for Tito's wife, Jovanka. Although I have to say that herself was only once here during their first visit in early 1977, and she never came back here again. This is the salon of the pink suite, and the next room is something I think every lady should have. It's a dressing room, or as we call it, a makeup room. This way. The next room is her bathroom, and of course everything is still in pink. Jovanka's bedroom. And in a few moments, we'll be able to see that her bed is a bit bigger than Tito's bed, simply because of the fact she was much taller than her husband, so that's why the bigger bed. And this is one of the entrances to the blue suite. Again, you can see where the name comes from. Everything is in blue. And this is presidential bedroom, part his study room. And a small bed in the corner was for his military aid officer, if he's required to sleep inside presidential bedroom, depending on day-to-day health of the president. The photo on the wall behind the bed was taken about 4.5 years before Tito died, and the photo on the opposite wall is from 1950s of the 20th century. And now we are going to see, for me personally, the most beautiful room in the building. And it's his bathroom. It maybe sounds a little bit odd, but you will see in a second why. I said it before, everything for the president. I really meant it. This is the most luxurious and the most expensive room in the building. It's because of this marble around you. It's unique marble in the world, and it's been made in only one place in the world, in Brazil. Also, this is the only marble on the planet that has a natural blue color, like this. I've been also told that you need 1 cubic meter of the stone from a quarry to make only 1 square meter of the marble. So given all that, you can only imagine the amount of stone and the price for this bathroom alone. And you also saw the Tito's barber chair. The chair has one of my favorite features that was added to the chair later. You see, Tito was a big fan of handmade Cuban cigars. And, of course, those Cuban cigars were always a personal gift from none other than Fidel. Well,
yes, Castro sent Churchill a big cabinet full of cigars. We went to Chartwell, which where Churchill lived, and because Churchill loved his cigars.
Of course.
And it was an enormous cabinet full. And MI5... the security services took it and they destroyed every cigar because they said there was probably poison in somewhere. But they gave Churchill the cabinet empty with no cigars, and he kept the cabinet.
Really? Sounds similar, like the story right after the end of World War II. the Soviet Union gave as a present a big U.S. coat of arms carved in wood as a present to the U.S. Embassy in Berlin. And many years after that, they discovered that it was actually a listening device.
A microphone.
A microphone, yeah. It was hidden in that in that coat of arms. Maybe that's why the MI5 did that. Now we are going through Tito's closet, Tito's dressing room, to the salon. The salon of the presidential suite, basically a place for Tito to relax in those rare occasions that he had the time to relax between his work and the therapies that he had here. I can tell you here that none of the guest rooms has an ocean view or a sea view. And in addition to that, Tito's suite is placed in the middle of the building. All of that is because of the security reasons. Everything was considered. Now we are leaning the opposite side. A few weeks ago, one of the guests asked me about those cigars, a guest from UK. Churchill was a big fan of those cigars as well. And I said, yeah, but the difference is Tito's cigars were a gift from Castro. Churchill's weren't. Simply as that.
Yes, well, I'm sure MI5 probably smoked a lot of them.
Probably. Probably by the person that was least favorite in MI5. Along this hallway, there are 10 so-called ordinary rooms, and they were intended for Tito's and Jovanka's personal escort. Each 10 of them are exactly the same, and this is the one that's open, so you can see the look of an ordinary room. And I always say here to the teenage visitors, the strange thing on the desk is a telephone from the 70s. Actually, they really don't know what it is. I had a teacher as a guest from Canada a few months ago, and she explained to me that in their school in Canada, they had a telephone like that. Mm-hmm. And the small children, when they asked to call home, she just said, use that. And all of them are like, what is that? Now we are going to the upper level, where we'll see one of three luxury suites, which were intended for Tito's personal guests or high-ranking members of the government. Each three are different in size, but they are quite similar in design, and we are going to see the smallest one. But even that one is quite bigger than the presidential suite, as you will see. Besides those three luxury suites, on this upper floor are also two small rooms behind you, one for Tito's personal driver and the other for Tito's personal doctor.
Was he sick?
Yes. At that time he was, and the main reason why the villa was built so quickly, he suffered from so-called peripheral vascular disease. It's a very, very bad blood circulation in someone's limbs, and in Tito's case, in his legs. This is the smallest suite that we have. It's right above the main entrance where we came inside the building. They say that Tito apparently had only one request during the construction of this building. Now, I don't know if this is really true, but knowing Tito's character, how was he as a person, it could be easily true. And what he said during the construction was only about the trees in the park. You see, the whole park is planted. And what Tito said was, plant the trees in the park already fully grown or half grown. I don't have the time to watch them grow. As I said, I don't know if this is really true, but knowing his character, it could be quite easily true.
Okay.
2 years ago, Prince Charles and Lady Camilla visited Montenegro.
Did they?
Yeah, I think it was 2 years ago. Anyway, almost all the press reported Prince Charles' first time in Montenegro.
Oh, yeah.
And it simply wasn't...
But you know
yeah.
better. So did he actually stay here, Charles?
No. He was just on a one-day meeting with the president.
Yeah. Will you do, as we say, kind of meeting?
Actually, no, because Hitler wouldn't listen even to Stalin of that time. And in 1949, as a result, it was this close between a full-scale war between Soviet Union and Yugoslavia. Stalin actually brought many tank units to the border with Yugoslavia, but he never dared to cross that border because at the time the Yugoslavian army was already very strong, and plus Tito had excellent relations with the Western world. So Stalin never dared to do what he did after that with Czechoslovakia, Poland, Hungary, Bulgaria, and all the other Eastern Bloc countries. Not only that, there is about those... I said earlier that Tito was a big fan of handmade Cuban cigars. On one of his receptions in the White House in Washington, I think it was President Nixon at that time, there was a press conference, joint press conference. President Nixon and President Tito were sitting on those big chairs, and all of a sudden, Tito pulled out Cuban cigars and lighted up in the middle of the White House. And not only that smoking was prohibited, it was and still is illegal to have a Cuban cigar in the United States. Tito didn't care, just lighted up in the White House and said, like, what? Now, this is the therapy level, and every kind of medical therapy there is in the Instituto Tigalo also exists here, so you can call the villa a small institute if you want. Plus, there is one more extra therapy room that even Institute doesn't have, and we are going to see it after we see the swimming pool over here. The swimming pool on that end has a moving bottom, and it's there because despite its size, this is a therapy swimming pool. So there had to be a moving bottom which could go all the way up or down, needed for different kinds of therapies. In a corner, there are two small sauna rooms, and the pool, as the rest of the hydrotherapies, could have, by Tito's wish or need, either a fresh water, a mineral water, or a sea water. Everything could be changed quite quickly. This side of the therapies are room for physical massages, mud therapies, electrotherapies, basically every kind of therapy that includes water. That doesn't include water, sorry. And this side are the hydrotherapy rooms. And I have to say that all this equipment is still functional should anyone choose to use it again. After all
like
these
you?
Years.
You?
Oh, I'm not a therapist, so... This is that one extra therapy room that even Institute doesn't have. It uses hot and cold water under high pressure through these hoses, and all of that was designed for the illness Tito had, for that bad blood circulation in his legs. In April in 1980, he was admitted in the Slovenian Medical Center in Ljubljana, the very best that Yugoslavia had at that time. His condition was so severe that doctors even amputated his left leg trying to save him. But he never recovered from that surgery. A few days after that, he got gangrene and eventually died on May the 4th in 1980.
How old was he?
It was 3 weeks before his 88th birthday.
Wow, he did pretty well then.
He was quite cold then.
Yeah. A therapy bath. Not a jacuzzi bath, if anyone is asking, although it could serve as one. It's a therapy bath designed so that two patients and two therapists could be in the water in the same time. And this is hydrogalvanic therapy.
So is this just hot water? It looks like it's electricity.
Yes, because you see these metal plates here. A galvanized electric current is being released through water. And all that maybe looks funny now, but... it's still functional, and I always say, I don't know if the computer programs from this age will be functional from 40 years from now. And this still is. Simple as that. Now we are going to see the lowest level of the building. And I have to say that despite the popular belief, there are no secret levels, secret rooms or nothing like that. In this building anyway. I have a small question for you now. Can anyone cares to guess what's this? Even the wildest guest. Actually, the wildest guest was from one older lady a few weeks ago. And since this will be aired in live program, I cannot say what she said. But trust me, it was very wild. And
looks
anyway,
like something that makes waves.
Interesting, but no.
Cross section in a submarine.
First one, but still no. The machine was called the aquarium, and it was used for controlling quality of fresh water, drinking water coming into this building, in a way that a week before Tito was about to arrive, it was inhabited by a special kind of fish, a kind that can only live in absolutely clean water. On any sign of water imperfection, even the slightest imperfection, the fish would simply die. If that were to happen, fish would fall, if the fish died, it would fall directly to the bottom, which would then trigger the automatic alarm and the automatic shutdown of the water. It never happened, but in addition to all of this, just to be safe, there was a man here whose only job was to sit here and watch the fish. Exciting job. Now, this is the entrance to the bomb shelter. So-called dry toilets or chemical toilets. The buckets are removed, of course. Now, in the bunker, there are 36 beds around you, which means that it was intended only for the guests of the villa, not the staff. This is also the only room in the building where nothing was made specially for the president, meaning only inside everyone wore the same. Fortunately, it was never used for its purpose. This, now I want to tell you that this was actually the end of the tour. I want to thank you for your visit and I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to invite you to the bar upstairs where you can have refreshments included in the price. Just give one slip of the ticket to the waitress upstairs and you can get either a coffee or a juice or water. Also at the bar you can buy souvenirs if you want. And by the main entrance there is a visitor book if you want to sign in, of course. Let me tell you one interesting thing about Tito, one of many actually. You see, you probably know that Tito was a leader of the most organized and the most powerful resistant movement in Europe in World War II against Nazi Germany.
Thank you.
And in the same time, he was married with a German woman. Her name was Hertha Haas, and although he divorced her at the end of the World War II, she actually held several positions in the administration over the years and died in 2010.
I mean, one thing that's a real mystery for me is the history in Yugoslavia of how it broke up, because it seemed like Tito was holding it together and then when he died, it fell apart.
It's not only a mystery to you, it's a mystery for us as well, because everybody has an opinion and generally it seems that way that Tito did, in fact, held everything together. Barely 10 years after he died, Yugoslavia fell apart, as you said. To this day, some conspiracy theories, but I wouldn't go that far why it fell apart.
Well, I think it benefited NATO, certainly.
The fact is that Yugoslavian army was number 4 in strength in Europe at that time. Maybe somebody didn't like that, who knows. But as I said, there are so many conspiracy theories, so it would be very ungrateful to elaborate it now.
I think the interesting thing for me about Yugoslavia is that it had this very strong halfway between the capitalist West and the communist East.
There you are quite right. That's partly thanks to Tito's politics. People usually ask me about opinions about Tito today, And that literally depends on whoever you ask. Everybody has a different opinion about Tito. But there are two facts about him. Thanks to his politics, Yugoslavian passport was the most expensive passport in the black market in the world, because it was open literally to the entire world. And the second fact about Tito that nobody can dispute it, is that his state funeral was and still is the biggest state funeral in history. The biggest number of state delegations on the highest level attended his funeral. And all that was in the middle of the Cold War in 1980.
So, did he not think about a successor?
Yes, he did, but apparently people around him didn't.
They didn't agree with him, or what?
By that time, he was very old, very ill, and everybody wanted to something for themselves. Who knows?
Okay, finally, I mean, he made his name, I think, it's fair to say, during the Second World War.
Yes.
Can you tell us something about what he did?
As I said earlier, he led the partisans. They fought against occupying forces, Germany and Italy mostly. And in the same time, he led a revolution. Because before the war, Yugoslavia was a monarchy. And after the war, Yugoslavia was declared as a republic. So that's probably his biggest achievement. As I said, the partisans were the most organized and the most powerful resistance in Europe, if not the world.
That was Alan Filipovic taking us on a tour of Tito's Villa Galeb, which means seagull, in Herceg Novi, Montenegro. That's all for this week. Dialects Bristol's first weekly MP3 podcast. You can download it to listen on your phone or in the car. Suggest interviewees, subscribe to our email list, and listen the week before broadcast if you like at our website, dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks to our guests, that is David Guinness and Alan Filipovic. Also to studio engineer Dave Bazanko. Dialects of Bristol Broadband Co-op production. Catch us on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon, and anyone can contribute. Contact us through the People's Republic of Stokes Croft, just off Jamaica Street, or online at prsc.org.uk. If you have some of your precious time to spare, you can volunteer with us or for hundreds of opportunities elsewhere in Britain via the National Volunteering website. That's do-it.org. So, thanks for listening to Dialect's Joseph Broz Tito special. And I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. I'll be back on Friday with my two-hour BCFM politics show from 6 till 8 p.m. Meanwhile, till next Tuesday midday from the Dialect crew, goodbye for now.
Göring says, they'll never bomb this place. We hail, hail, right in Herr Göring's face. Are we not the Superman? Aryan pure Superman.
Yeah, we is the Superman.
Super duper Superman.
Is this Nazi land so good? Would you leave it if you could?
Yeah, this Nazi land is good. We would leave it if we could.
We bring the world new order. Heil Hitler's world new order.
Everyone of foreign race
will love the Fuhrer's face when we bring to the world disorder. When the Fuhrer says, he is the master race. We heil, heil.
Heil!
Right in the Führer space, not to love the Führer is a great disgrace, so we Heil! Heil! Right in the Führer space. Not to love the Führer is a great disgrace, so be Heil! Heil! Right in the Führer's face!
Black coffee, I see double. Ooh, ooh, ooh. How am I gonna get home? Black coffee, I'm so dizzy. Black coffee, please get busy. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Help me so I can get home. Had a little too much hoopy soup. All I meant to take was one. Now my head is going loopy loop. Some stuffy kid, what fun, oh. Black coffee, help a fella. Black coffee, what'll I tell her? Ooh, 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 I'm afraid to go home.